The recordings have started. You may begin.
Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the webinar on the initial report of the GNSO Policy and Implementation Working Group on Tuesday, 10th March, 2015. On the call today, we have Amr El-Sadr, Ahmed Al-Mawani, Remy Nweke, Akinremi Peter Taiwo, Avery Doria, Ron Wickersham, Klaus Toll, Carlos Rao, Mary Lee Wolf, Sam Lafranco. From staff, we have myself, Mariam Bakoshi. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much. Over to you, Amr.
Well, thanks, Mariam. I note there's also someone called Kay in the Adobe Connect room. I'm not sure if he or she were noted on the during the roll call.
Amr, it's me. Oh. It's Kathy.
Kathy, hey, Kathy. How's
having
it going?
Trouble with my keyboard.
Right.
Good. Other than having
okay.
trouble with my keyboard.
All right. So well, glad to have you here, Kathy. Okay. This is what I figured I would go ahead and do here today is go through some of the initial report. It's obviously a very long document. It's 88 pages, so I won't be able to go through all of it in too much detail. But there are certain parts of it I would just like to cover, even in brief, before moving on to the second part of what I had planned to present, which was the response that I drafted. And in doing so, I hope to get as much feedback both on the report and on the responses that I drafted. Those are not set in stone, and we still have a couple of days to make some changes, but we do need to submit them by March 17th, in a week from now, and eventually we do need to get the response through the policy committee and have it endorsed for an NCSG submission. We have a couple of first-timers on this call, and thank you very much for joining us. And we do have at least two participants who are on the phone bridge and not in the Adobe Connect room. I will do what I can to accommodate the fact that you can't see what's on the screen in front of us. And please, at any point in time, if you have a question or a comment to submit, just interrupt me and let me know you want to say something, and we can go ahead and do that. And for everybody else in the Adobe Connect room, all you have to do is sort of just click on that little button at the top left of your screen that's got a guy with his hand up, and then I will know you want to ask a question or make a comment. All right, so thank you. A little background on this initial report. This is a non-PDP working group, which means that there is no consensus policy being discussed here. This is more of a working group asked to answer a few charter questions on the differences between policy and implementation in the GNSO context. And if I'm not mistaken, maybe Avery or Kathy could help me with this. I think this sort of came up after the non-contracted parties house intersessional meeting in Los Angeles a couple of years ago, when the trademark plus 50 issue came up, and there was a big argument about what is policy and what is implementation. And so this group was chartered to answer the question on policy versus implementation. That changed a little while later and became policy and implementation. I see Kathy says yes in the Adobe Connect chat. I'm guessing it's a yes in terms of the context behind this working group. Yeah, please, Kathy, go ahead.
Sorry, I should have raised my hand. It's not just trademark plus 50. We looked at the trademark clearinghouse, for example, and saw very, very, we had said very, very clearly just word marks could go in, marks that were text-based, because if you have a design, you can't reflect the design like the McDonald's Golden Arches, for example, in a domain name, because we don't have designs in our URLs, we don't have designs in our domain names, and yet when you look at the implementation of the Trademark Clearinghouse, they're accepting design marks. So we really, really need, there's been a real disconnect between those who kind of were involved in creating this bottom-up grassroots policy and then those who are putting it into play, and both they don't have a way of getting back to those who kind of design the rules, and we don't have a way of communicating to them when we think they're going off base. So this is really important what you're doing. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Kathy, for that bit of historical context, because that does actually help in terms of me presenting at least one of the processes that are being recommended here to sort of specifically address issues that may come up like that. And that takes me to the next part of what I wanted to discuss here. The way the charter was set up for this working group is that it sort of asked the working group to differentiate what is policy and what is implementation. But the route that the working group eventually took was a little different in terms of, instead of actually defining what policy is and what implementation is, it came up with a couple of new processes by which the GNSO community could sort of answer that question on a case-by-case basis. I think the working group members felt that this was a better way to deal with this instead of trying to come up with a blanket definition that may or may not cover every situation that the GNSO encounters in the future, and sort of a way to predict or sort of prepare the GNSO community in its interaction with the ICANN board and staff on addressing these issues as they come up. So the report is really divided up into a few sections. If you're at the top of the document, you can see that there's, past the first page and maybe on the second one where the table of contents starts, you can see that number 3 in the table of contents, and that's on page 2, it says working definitions. And this was the first thing this working group started on. And because of the complex nature of what was being discussed in terms of different policy development processes and implementation processes, they thought it would be helpful that there's a list of working definitions that cover everything that needs to be covered in this report. So these definitions are meant as a guide for anyone reading the report, so that when you come across a technical term, you can refer back to the working definitions to understand exactly what is meant by this term in the report. So these definitions are not meant to be used outside of the context of this working group, but are a helpful guide when reading this report if anyone has read it or cares to read it in the future. The second important part of this report is probably the policy and implementation principles. They're listed as number 4 in the table of contents, and they're on page 13 of the document. And I will try to go through those briefly, but try to cover them somewhat. These are an important set of principles that the working group agreed on, and I think that we have full consensus amongst the working group members on them as principles. And these principles are being recommended. They're part of the recommendations of this working group, where the working group is recommending that ICANN actually adopts them as principles to be used in the context of policy development and policy implementation. So those are quite important. They're a pretty solid set of principles, but would like to hear from everybody else. The next important part that I want to cover in this report are 3 new processes that are being recommended to be used. And I will go through each one of them and try to explain each one's purpose and how each process will work. So these are 3 processes. There's the GNSO input process, the GNSO guidance process, and the expedited policy development process. So these are 3 new processes that don't exist, and this working group is recommending that they are created and included in the GNSO operating procedures, and that will also require some changes in the ICANN bylaws to accommodate those. The last part of this report that I want to go through is the part detailing how the working group uses implementation review teams working. Implementation review teams are groups that follow the implementation of a policy after the GNSO Council makes its recommendation to the ICANN board and the ICANN board approves or adopts these as ICANN policies. At that point, an implementation review team should be formed. We've only had one implementation review team in the history of the GNSO. The rules or the guidelines surrounding those in the GNSO operating procedures are kind of, they're not very thorough. But we hope that after this working group makes its recommendations, there will be a lot more context surrounding this. And in discussing the purpose and the methods of an implementation review team's work, we did work very closely. The working group members worked very closely with the ICANN staff, particularly the global domains divisions, which is responsible for implementation of policies after the ICANN board has approved them as recommendations from the GNSO. That's what I hope to cover in terms of this report. Following that, I will try to jump over to another document, which is the draft responses for the NCSG, and try to get a feel what folks here think of that. Are there any questions so far? If anyone is confused about this, I've just been trying to sort of set the structure of what I plan on discussing here, and if anyone does have any confusions or questions at this point, I'd be glad to make clarification.
Well, I just want to ask a question. This is Remy for the record.
Hi, Remy. Go ahead.
Yeah, what really happens now, assuming a recommendation is made to ICANN board and in between it was not fully accepted, what are the likely processes that particular recommendation may need to take or suffer?
Okay, well, currently there is a process which is the policy development process, the PDP. And this is the process in the GNSO by which a working group makes after having discussions for a long time, makes recommendations to the GNSO Council on a certain policy. And this process also includes sort of scoping the issue and drafting a charter team to sort of set out or create rules or the scope on what this working group, this PDP working group, will discuss. I guess depending on the recommendations and the level of consensus within the working group, the GNSO Council will make a vote, will vote on those recommendations. And if it passes through the GNSO Council, and there are certain voting thresholds depending on the nature of the recommendations. But if the recommendations coming out of a working group, a PDP working group, are approved by the GNSO Council, those are then sent on to the ICANN board. And the ICANN board, in turn, votes. And if the ICANN board votes in favor of those recommendations, then they become ICANN policies or GTLD policies. Once that is complete, it is, I guess it's depending on the recommendations as well, the working group or the GNSO Council could recommend that an implementation review team be formed. And in that case, an implementation review team will be formed to sort of work alongside with ICANN staff, specifically, again, GDD, the Global Domain Division staff, to oversee maybe oversee is not the right word. It's more sort of as help guide GDD staff on how to implement the policy to make sure that it is implemented as intended when it was recommended by the GNSO. So that, in a nutshell, is the process for developing GTLD policy in the GNSO. Does that answer your question, Remy? Do you have any further question or clarification?
Yes, I'm fine. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, I won't go through the working definitions, which is the first part that I discussed in this document. If anyone is going to go ahead and actually go through the report, I would recommend that you take a quick look at the working definitions, and if there is a technical term you're having a difficulty understanding, you can always just refer back to them. So what I will start with are the principles, item number 4 in the table of contents, which are the policy and implementation principles on page 13. Let me head straight down. If you're in the Adobe Connect room, then you can just scroll down to page 13. Every one of you should have control of the document on the screen. Okay. So those principles are divided into several subsections. Let's see, there's three. Yeah, I think there are four parts to those principles. You have a few general or overarching principles, and that is the first section. And then you have principles that are specific to policy and implementation. You have a third group of principles, which are primarily related to policy, and a fourth set of principles that apply to implementation, specifically to implementation. I don't want to go through them all, but I think it's worth just going through some of them. And again, for those who are not in the Adobe Connect room, in the original email Miriam sent out, there is a link to the open public comment page on this. And if you follow that link, you will go there and you will find another link where you can download a PDF version of the initial report. And that's what we're looking at now. So you can look at this whenever you can. Okay, well, the overarching principles, so some of them are about ICANN, about multi-stakeholderism, and about DNS policy. Let's skip those and go to the second group, which are principles that apply to policy implementation. What it says is both GNSO policy implementation processes must be based on the ICANN multi-stakeholder model, and the ICANN multi-stakeholder model is one of the definitions defined earlier in the report. So these sorts of terms, you can actually just refer back to the working definitions and figure out exactly what the working group means by that. To ensure this, the following principles are proposed. First, policy development processes must function in a bottom-up manner. The process must not be conducted in a top-down manner and then imposed on stakeholders, although an exception may be made in emergency cases such as where there are risks to security and stability, as defined in ICANN's Security, Stability, and Resiliency Framework. So basically just the principle that says bottom-up, not top-down. Second principle, development and implementation of policy must have a basis in an adherence to standards of fairness, notice, transparency, integrity, objectivity. You know, maybe I shouldn't go through all of these, but I'll sort of pick out a few. There are a few interesting ones, especially those related to implementation. There is one under policy, which I think is a fairly important one, that says that GTLD policy development belongs in the GNSO. Sort of set that as a ground rule, as a principle, that you know, GTLD policy should not come from anywhere but the GNSO. And I hope that principle doesn't spark up too much debate, because of course there are advisory committees in ICANN that give the ICANN board advice. And they may give advice pertaining to GTLD policy, but I think the issue with that is that, well, if there is advice that comes to the ICANN board shouldn't just go ahead and create policy based on it, but sort of refer it back to the GNSO, and hopefully using one of these processes that the working group has come up with. If not, then to use the traditional PDP process that the GNSO has been using. Let's skip down to the implementation principles. And the reason I want to do that is because they are somewhat related. It's important to sort of go through these now if I'm going to be explaining what the implementation review teams will do later on. On page 16 of the document, under section D, there's principles that apply primarily to implementation. So you have number 1, implementation standards A. All GNSO PDP working groups should be encouraged to provide as much implementation guidance as possible within a reasonable time frame as outlined in the PDP manual. To the extent implementation guidance cannot be provided, the PDP recommendations should strive to identify areas where additional policy work may be needed during implementation. B, changes to GNSO implementation guidance need to be examined by the GNSO Council or another appropriate entity designated by the GNSO Council or where they fall in the spectrum of policy and implementation. In all cases, the committee maintains the right to challenge whether such updates need further review for policy implications. C, ICANN staff tasked by the board with the implementation of the approved GNSO policy, who are the Global Domains Division, recommendations should be able to make transparent changes to the proposed implementation of the policy recommendations into an implementation plan as long as they do not affect the intent of the policy recommendations. Examples of such changes include administrative updates, error corrections, and process details. In all cases, any such changes should be communicated to the GNSO Council or appropriate entity as designated by the GNSO Council, which should, based on the working group principles enumerated above, have standardized and efficient mechanisms for challenging whether such changes would affect the intent of the policy recommendations. D, in all cases, all material changes that are made in the development of the implementation plan that affect the implementation guidance, intent of, and or policy recommendations as adopted by the GNSO Council should be communicated to the GNSO Council or appropriate entity as designated by the GNSO Council. The Council or its designated entity should then use standardized processes to review the changes, determine whether they are supported by the intent of the policy recommendation, and make recommendations to modify implementation plan accordingly. E, each of the principles in this document must be considered in terms of the degree to which it adheres to and further the principles defined in ICANN's core values as documented in Article 2 of the ICANN bylaws. F, the resolution of unexpected policy or implementation-related issues identified during the implementation phase should not delay implementation more than the minimum amount of time that is necessary. Okay, the reason why I wanted to go through these is to really sort of show everyone that the whole purpose of this is to make sure of a few things, to make sure that a few things always happen during policy implementation. One, that there are principles that say that policy implementation should always happen in accordance with the intent of the policy development process and the ensuing recommendations. So implementation should occur as they were intended to be when they were recommended, the policy implementation. So that's really important. And the second very important issue in these principles is that when there is a question, it always goes back to the GNSO. The ICANN board or ICANN staff don't get to decide on their own, okay, you know what, there is a question on this, we're not sure if the GNSO meant this or that, but we're going to go ahead and just decide that it's going to be this and not that. So that can't work. And when there is a question on the intent of a policy, it does have to go back to the GNSO Council. The third point is that if the question doesn't even come up, if ICANN staff implementing GTLD policy or the ICANN board doesn't ask what is meant by a certain policy, but they just go ahead and start implementing a policy in a way that it was not intended to be when it was being developed or recommended, the GNSO should have mechanisms by which they can just say, hold on a second, you're messing this policy up. This isn't what the policy recommendation was, and this isn't what the GNSO communicated to the ICANN board, and this isn't what the ICANN board voted in favor of. So these are a couple of important principles that will hopefully, when applied, mitigate any risk of policies being implemented inaccurately. I don't know if anyone wants to give any examples where that may be an issue. I know Kathy does a lot of work with Whois, and she was on the original Whois review team, and it seems that there's a lot of even though that's not strictly a PDP working group, but there's sort of a lot of aftermath activity following the WHOA's review team's recommendations and findings, and they're not particularly very well interpreted. I mean, these recommendations and findings aren't very well interpreted in the way they're being applied in current WHOA's activities. So I guess what the intent here is to sort of avoid that in a policy development process context. Okay, I think I can skip the rest of those and go straight to the processes. And let's see, we have those three processes, and I think the best way to go through them would be going to the annexes of the report. So the first process, which is the GNSO input process, which is Annex C of the report on page 45. So if all of you would just jump to page 45 of the document. Oh, I can sync and desync the document, can I? So maybe when I make those jumps, I'll just sync and then desync. Okay, cool. Is everybody on the page? Any questions so far? I feel like I'm flying through this, and I'm worried that I might be losing everyone. Okay, I don't see
Amar, I have a question. It's Kathy.
Oh, go ahead, Kathy.
How many people do you envision being on these implementation teams, and how are they appointed? No, quick answer, short answer is fine. Just wondering.
Okay. There is a recommendation on that in the report under the implementation review team, and for the SIC WHOA's implementation review team, which is the first implementation review team I am aware of, at least. It was basically there was a call for volunteers from the original PDP working group, and there was no rule at the time. This implementation review team was created to sort of guide who should be members, but everyone figured, hell, you know, why not just have the original members of the PDP working group involved? Because one of the prerequisites of being on the IRT, the implementation review team, is that the members actually know the policy really well, because on implementation review teams, you shouldn't be introducing policy issues for discussion again. You shouldn't be reopening policy discussions that have already taken place. But what this report is recommending in terms of membership of IRTs is that there would be a call for volunteers from the original PDP working group. So anyone who was on the PDP working group and is interested to continue with the IRT is welcome to do so. There would also be a recruitment process for subject matter experts that GDD would feel they need help from to sort of guide them through technical issues that they may need assistance on in terms of how to implement policies. Thinking about the WHOA's, the THIC WHOA's implementation review team, one of the recommendations that PDP came up with, which I would say Avri is kind of the architect to that recommendation, was actually the creation of the implementation review team, because the most difficult issue we had on that PDP was how would ICANN address when this policy conflicts with the local laws or certain jurisdictions, and the working group was chartered to take a look at these issues, but after over a year of discussion, we really felt that the working group actually lacked the expertise to answer that question. And so one of the recommendations was that this should be done during implementation, that ICANN staff, while implementing this policy, should reach out to experts in this field and try to find out to what extent implementing a THIC WHOA's policy may may conflict with certain jurisdictions, and how the risk of that would be mitigated, or how it would be handled in general. So in this example, expertise in data protection and privacy laws was needed, which was not available when the PDP was taking place. So in implementation, the Global Domains Division team and the IRT should sort of should technically reach out and try to find experts who could help answer those questions. So that's basically, those are the two main groups that would form an IRT, and I'm not including GDD staff in that team because GDD staff works alongside the IRT, but they're not actually part of the IRT. An implementation review team's leadership would be under the guidance of GDD staff. So instead of, for example, when you have a PDP working group, you have a PDP working group chair, right? And you might have a vice chair, you might have more than one chair, co-chairs and co-vice chairs, like you have on the privacy proxy service accreditation issue, or at least that's how it started off. But on implementation review teams, it's GDD staff, ICANN staff, that takes leadership. But as I will explain, or maybe I won't need to later on, there will still be a council liaison to an IRT that can jump in case there is a disagreement between the IRT members and GDD staff that cannot be resolved.
Can I just add something, and then let me let you go back to the rest? That was a great answer.
Sure.
In certain cases, the people who were the representatives of stakeholder groups will no longer be available. So I think of Marie Laure, who did such a wonderful job on some of the work. I was on a working group with her, and maybe was it early proxy privacy? I think so, but I'm not sure. And it was one of the many who is issues and privacy issues. But she's no longer able to participate. So in that case, let's say she had seen the PDP all the way through the end, it would seem to be appropriate for NCSG to have another representative on the implementation group, someone who was brought up to speed, perhaps by the departing members if they're available, perhaps by others, but the implementation one would think should be as diverse as the stakeholder representation in the policymaking process itself.
That's an interesting idea, and yes, I don't think that was actually included as part of the recommendations, but it is something we can certainly add in the NCSG comments, that apart from the original members, because sometimes you may, and the working group actually, the initial report actually acknowledges that there may be a time gap between policy development and the implementation. So in the event that there aren't, that the working group members stakeholder group are not available anymore, maybe there should be some sort of mechanism to at least contact the stakeholder group and make sure that if they want to replace that person with someone else, that should be an option.
I think there really has to be. Absolutely. Thanks.
Yeah. Maybe I could add that to the response and send it along with any other suggestions, and let me make a note of that. Aubrey, you have your hand up. Would you like to go ahead?
Yeah, this is Aubrey speaking. Yeah, I wanted to comment on that. I think it's problematic in that the main purpose of the IRP is not to present necessarily the arguments of the stakeholder groups, but it's to represent the consensus that the working group came to, and that's why there was that whole philosophy that these are people who have served on the group and are basically carriers of the group's viewpoint. And so I you know, there has to be other methods of dealing with appealing implementations that we don't like because they go against what we believe. But I think that the idea of having substitutes per stakeholder group or per consistent constituency or per faction within a constituency might be problematic, and certainly goes against the general principle that it is working group continuity that you're looking for, not continued representativity. So it's a different philosophy, and I'm not sure I agree with adding that as a comment. Of course, we can. I don't need to agree with it, but I just want to indicate that I see it problematic as an additional element in our answer. Thanks.
Aubrey, that's a very fair point. Let me just weigh in with a couple of thoughts, and I'd also like your feedback on that. But what this initial report is suggesting is in fact that some subject matter experts also be included on an IRT who are not initially familiar with the PDP or weren't involved in the PDP working group. There is an understanding, and it is documented in the initial report, that policy discussions should not be revisited. They should not be reopened. That is not the intent or the purpose of an IRT. But in terms of bringing in these new folks anyway who are brought in for specific reasons, there has to be some sort of way to make sure that they become familiar with what the PDP recommendations were, just to make sure that they don't stray and sort of reopen policy issues that have already been achieved the necessary consensus levels. When I think in terms of what Kathy was asking about, in terms of stakeholder group representation, you're absolutely right. Stakeholder group representation is very important in achieving consensus. It doesn't and should not play the same sort of role on IRTs. However, when I think again about the Thick Quiz IRT, we had four or five NCSG members on that PDP. Only one of us, myself, has gone on to the implementation review team. And when thinking about the recommendation on that the GDD should work to find out what sort of legal or jurisdictional conflicts come up, conflicts with the policy, from what I can tell, I'm the only one giving GDD staff a hard time about this. Everybody else sort of seems to ignore it, and IPC staff and ALAC members are pretty much saying, you know what, you should just go ahead and work on implementing the other aspects of the policy, even if the answer to this question is months and months behind schedule. This issue was supposed to be resolved by November 2014. And still we've heard nothing on the IRT in response to this question or anything about the legal review that was supposed to happen. And now we're at a stage where some of the policies that are contingent, on the findings of the review are sort of moving forward to make sure that there is as little delay as possible without the review actually happening. And this might become extremely problematic in the future. And it might be completely ignored if, for example, I wasn't on the IRT and there's no NCSG representation and it was NCSG that was really pushing for this specific policy recommendation. It was us. We were the ones who were primarily concerned with privacy and data protection issues in the Thick Quiz policy. So if we assume that the implementation of a Thick Quiz policy only started happening, let's say, 5 years after the policy was actually created, and you don't have any of the original NCSG working group members available anymore, would it be unreasonable in that event or in any other event similar where it would say, okay, maybe the IRT should reach out to the NCSG and try to find someone who would be willing to learn about the policy and understand what the policy recommendations were and make sure that the implementation of the policy is indeed aligned with the original intent of the recommendation. And it wouldn't just be NCSG, I imagine. I imagine it would also include other stakeholder groups and constituencies who have also sort of whose representation on the original PDP might have moved on to other things. So, Aubrey, you've got your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I still see it as problematic. I think perhaps if there are still other working group members that are still there, maybe some substitution can be done. I think if it's an important issue, then perhaps it's something where somebody should press for an expert in that issue be added. But I do see it as problematic as basically recreating the policy issues. And I'm less concerned about, you know, in this case we're talking about, but what about if the NCSG voice isn't heard? I'm less concerned about that than I am about the larger and richer constituencies that can make sure that that they always have someone there that's going to be arguing the policy issue that they didn't win. And that is where I really think the issue comes in some of our fellows who, as we know, never give up the argument even after the consensus point has been reached. So that's why I think there's a real advantage in sticking with the people who did do the slogging through, who did read all of the emails as they were going there, who was part of the sort of evolving of the answer and the give and take that reached the consensus. Now, certainly you'd say that, oh, yes, it's okay as long as you read the whole history, read all the emails, read all the documents, listen to all the phone calls, and then once we're sure you've done that, then, you know, maybe we can let you in. But I see it as a bigger risk than I see it as an advantage in doing that. I think that's why it's important for us to have other appeals mechanisms when staff or a implementation review team goes off the rails. But I think that that's critical, and we're talking about that kind of accountability elsewhere, that you raise the issue that way. But in terms of the implementation review, barring, as you said, bringing in an expert, and perhaps it is a good thing to suggest if all the talent on an issue has left, to say you need an expert on this topic and to bring that in through the council as a way to remediate such a situation. But to just change the policy to sort of say, hey, you know, whenever you want to tap out, you can tap in another part of your tag team to continue arguing this is as much a risk for the things we care about as it is an advantage. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Aubrey. I think your concerns are very, they're certainly warranted, and I could see where how that situation could be problematic and perhaps even be abused by any party involved. Well, thinking about what Kathy brought up as well, and I think that her concern is legitimate from my personal experience. Maybe it's something we can use the next couple of days, or at least I will. I'll try to think about it a little bit more, and maybe following tomorrow's webinar on the same topic, try to come up with an answer. Maybe we can take this discussion on list as well, on the policy committee as well as the NCSG discuss list. Joy, would you like to go ahead? Barely.
Can you hear me now?
Better. Thanks, Joy.
Okay, thanks. It's Joy for the record. I just wanted to amplify a couple of points I've heard today. I mean, firstly, just to say it's great to see this report, and I'd really like to endorse the principles and the approach that's been taken. I think it provides a workable framework, and it's particularly, I'm thinking about the circumstances which gave rise to this piece of work some years ago, and so I'm feeling it's good to see this report a couple of thoughts. One is that I really endorse Avery's point about supporting the consensus position, and if not the consensus position, the collective responsibility for the GNSO decision and the policy making process through implementation. I mean, and I think that's very important for us in NCSG, because if I recall correctly, the circumstances which gave rise to this piece of work were, in fact, a breakdown of that consensus in implementation, and a relitigation through implementation of, you know, trademark clearinghouse issues. So I think if we're to honour, you know, the principles that we've been talking about, it's really important, this point Avery's making, that implementation be done in a way which guards the policy that we're responsible for implementing, not the positions we took on the policy. So that's my first point. I think the second point, however, is that I'm interested in whether people have been tracking sort of the relative size of the task of those implementation review teams. Particularly, I think this is an issue for NCSG members. You know, many of us are, you know, volunteers putting this work in inside and around other paid jobs. What is the burden of that, is the weight of that responsibility, if you like, falling equally amongst the GNSO members? And I think that's something that we need, and the constituencies which are participating in implementation, I think that's something we particularly need to take account of and just monitor, really, and have some way to raise concerns if we're feeling that it's becoming and then finally, my final point really is just that looking back is sometimes not the best idea, but I did wonder whether anybody had thought these policies which have been developed would have helped us if we'd had them in the case of the policy issues which had given rise to this work around the trademark clearinghouse. That might be a slight distraction to answer that, just in terms of thinking backwards and looking forwards around the robustness of this work. Thanks, that's all from me.
Well, thank you, Joy. Actually, let me start with that last distraction that you raised, and I think it's a good question, because if these recommendations don't actually fulfill the purpose of answering this question, then they're pretty much kind of useless. I mean, that was the whole point of all of this. So if some folks here who are familiar with what happened back during the LA intersessional a couple of years ago, and who have also read this report or been a part of making it, could sort of reflect on whether this is helpful or not. With that in mind, as a sort of test case, please, if you could speak up now. I don't see any hands up. Okay, K2, is that Kathy again?
Yeah, I've changed my name again. So, yes, it's Kathy.
All right, cool.
Since I interrupted early on as you were going through the principles and guidelines, can I suggest that we save that excellent question of Joy's for the end, so that after
we get
the report and its details together, and I tried to go back through it. I found it difficult to parse, so I'm really looking forward to the discussion together. And then I think that would be a great time to talk about the question.
All right, great. We did go through some of the important principles on implementation, and then the discussion led us into, well, at least it required me to explain quite a bit of what is involved in the meat of the recommendations on IRTs in general. So, yeah, is this Remy? Could I ask you to please mute your mic if you're not speaking? If you're on the phone bridge and not in the AC room and would like to ask a question, then just please interrupt me and let me know. One thought I do have on the issue, because I think Joy also, the way Joy presented her view on this sort of, well, what I got from that is that she sort of sympathizes with Avery's position and at the same time would like some sort of safeguard to make sure that that people are at least aware of what's going on and have the opportunity to object. And thinking about that, in terms of the recommendations for the IRT, and I'm kind of sort of combining the principles at the beginning along with the with Annex H, which I hope is on your screen right now, starting on page 82 of the document. Let me just, all right, I've just synced that so you have it, and now I've desynced it so that you can navigate the documents again on your own. But one of the recommendations is that there is a GNSO council liaison to the IRT that would regularly report back to the council on progress being made. So and that's a thought that I have right now, even if, let's say, the NCSG had a member or more than one member on the PDP working group, but none on the implementation review team, then the reports coming in via the council liaison should be able to inform the NCSG counselors at the time and sort of raise a flag in case there is a view amongst the NCSG that a policy is being implemented and not in, in a way that was not intended to be, without actually revisiting the original policy or trying to reopen the policy discussion. I'm wondering if that is something that is sort of like a middle ground or a way to mitigate that risk, and would that be would that be seen as enough of a safeguard in a situation like that? Of course, this is dependent on how attentive our GNSO counselors are to the reports that they're getting, and it would also either the GNSO counselors or any other members of NCSG who are following the policy discussion and the implementation schedule that is being reported to the G Council. Kathy, is that an old hand or is it a new one? All right, old hand. Remy put a question in the chat saying, I was wondering if ICANN has some stipends for those experts being sought for in the IRT. But by stipends, Remy, do you mean does ICANN have funds that it allocates so that these IRT experts being recruited can attend ICANN meetings? Or I'm not sure I understand the question. Ah, okay. I see what you mean. Okay, Remy goes on to say, I do not see anyone who is an expert that will just volunteer. Yeah, there will have to be an active recruitment process where GDD staff will have to somehow recruit those experts. But no, there is no recommendation that says that ICANN can actually pay these people to come and do this as a job. And I personally speaking, I would find that to be a bit problematic because it may present a sort of conflict where these people become, well, sort of contracted to ICANN. And so it may present with some sort of conflict of interest. I don't know if anyone else has any views on this. But no, there is no recommendation that says that they should be financially reimbursed for their input. Kathy's asking that I briefly explain the GIP, GGP, and especially the GNSO expedited policy development process. And yes, I will do that as soon as I'm done with the IRT. I think I've actually gone through almost everything without going through the document. I don't think that we've left anything out. And when we go through the questions, we should be able to spot anything that I may have left out. Does anyone else have any questions on the IRT, or can I move on to the next process, or are there still questions on this? Okay, I don't see any hands. Okay, let me jump over to the GNSO input process. And that is on page 45. Okay, you should all have that on your screens right now. The GNSO input process is basically one of the new processes that this working group has recommended be created. And the intent of this process is to provide the GNSO with an opportunity to provide input on issues that do not involve GTLD policy. And the recommendations that would come out of this process would actually be non-binding. So this is sort of a way for the GNSO to answer questions coming at it from other parts of the ICANN community or perhaps from the ICANN board. Let's say, for example, the SAC has a question and they want input from different members of the community. They might specifically ask for GNSO inputs, and the GNSO council can opt to launch a process like this one, where the outcome, like I said, would be non-binding. It would be sort of like advice from the GNSO, and it would also have to not involve GTLD policy in any way. So that sort of explains what the GIP, the GNSO input process, would have to be. There are requirements for each one of these processes. The requirement for the GNSO input process, there we go, starts also on the same page, page 45. Those are the minimum requirements in terms of reporting the reason and where why the GNSO council is performing a GIP, and I should note that the recommendation involves the GNSO council. Yeah, who is this? Okay, Remy's asking which page are we on. We're on page 46 of the report, and I've just synced it. So you should be on the same page I'm on. And I desynced it again. Yeah, we're not on IRTs anymore. We're on GNSO input process. And it is important to note that when a question is given to the GNSO, the requester is not the one who defines what process is being used to answer the question. It's the GNSO council that will make this determination, and the GNSO council that will decide which process is the most appropriate process to use. Whether, for example, if it is something that pertains to GTLD policy, then we may need to have a formal PDP or maybe one of the other processes. But it is not the requester who will determine what process is being used, and this is important to understand. Another important issue to all of these processes, and I'll also describe on the GNSO input process, is the levels of consensus required to both initiate a process amongst GNSO counselors and the level of consensus required to approve recommendations coming out of the process. And this is something that I think is especially important, and I think that there may be some questions related to that with some of the processes, not this one, but with the other two, the GNSO guidance process and the expedited PDP, that I do not agree with. And so I think it's worth just mentioning them here.
Yeah.
There is a description of how the process is supposed to run, and I'm not going to go through that, but suffice to say that it does involve discussion among the community, so it's not something the GNSO Council will do on its own, and there's a public comment period. So there will be an opportunity for everyone to submit comments on the GNSO input process as well as the others. But I'm trying to find the consensus levels here. Okay, on page 49, this council deliberations. Okay, and it says approval of the GIP recommendation submitted to the council does not require a council vote, except in the case where one or more GNSO council members object to the adoption of the report. In such an instance, the GIP recommendations may be adopted only by the default threshold to pass a GNSO council motion. A simple majority vote of each house is set forth in Article 10, Sections 3 to 9 of the ICANN bylaws. So again, just to remind folks, this is not something that relates to GTLD policy, so it does not require the vote threshold of approving consensus policies. But here it says that the GIP recommendations do not actually require a vote unless there is an objection from at least one councillor to the recommendations being made. Okay, are there any questions or concerns with the GNSO input process? And again, we will go through those again when we come to the survey. I don't see any hands. Let me move on to the GNSO guidance process, which is on page 51. And I've synced you all to that page. Okay, the GNSO guidance process, and I'm going to, actually maybe Okay, so a GNSO guidance process, and that's what it says here, may be initiated by the GNSO Council when a request for input relating to GTLDs, either a new issue or in relation to previous policy recommendations, has been received from the ICANN board, or a GTLD issue has been identified by the GNSO Council that would benefit from GNSO guidance, and it has determined that the intended outcome is not expected to result in new contractual obligations for contracted parties. So the purpose of this process is to clarify any questions related to existing GTLD policies, and the process could also lead to amendments or changes in recommendations to a process to a policy only in the event that these do not require new contractual obligations with contracted parties, with registries and registrars. So that would be the purpose of a GNSO guidance process. And one of the examples that was being used, and I think is being used here in the initial report on where a GGP, a GNSO guidance process, might have come in handy, was the discussion on specification 13 of the registry agreement, and that issue that happened a few months ago, was it last summer actually, not that long ago, when the ICANN board introduced a new specification to the registry agreement regarding brand registries. And they asked the GNSO to sort of they asked the GNSO Council to review the draft language of that specification and advise on whether this was in accordance with the intended policy or not. And at that time, the GNSO Council didn't have a formal process to address this question. But now, this process, the GNSO guidance process, is being suggested. Sort of to handle situations that come up like that one, where the GNSO can sort of give input on a policy that has already been made, it's only been recommended and adopted by the ICANN board through the regular PDP, and maybe give maybe make changes to that as long as it doesn't have any new contractual obligations on registries or registrars. Kathy, go ahead, please.
Okay. Amar, with apologies, I'm a little confused because the creation of the Hello?
Yeah.
Is that me or someone?
I can hear you. No, that's not you. I can still hear you. Someone's been dropped off the call.
Should I keep talking, or do we know what line that is?
somehow get rid of that.
Yeah, we'll get rid of it now. Apologies about that.
Thank you.
Great.
There goes Kathy.
Can you hear me, Amr? Okay, great.
Yeah.
And again, this is a really helpful discussion. But isn't Specification 13 the essence of something that is a contractual obligation for contracted parties? We created a whole new set of registries, new GTLD registries, and they were brand registries, and we didn't do it through a policy development process. So I'm trying to figure out whether we've ever had a PDP that didn't just involve contractual obligations for contracted parties, that didn't just involve the obligations of the industry. And I think we may be hitting areas where we do develop policy, but we develop policy that also involves ICANN staff and compliance. The ICANN staff's compliance is huge. So I was wondering if you guys had talked about this in the working group, because, I don't know, it's I'm still trying to understand what this means. The intended outcome is not expected to result in new contractual obligations for contracted parties, but again, Specification 13 did just that.
Thanks, Kathy. I think the reason why Specification 13 was used as an example for that is because you could look at it in terms of, well, there was a change made in the registry agreement, so there are new contractual requirements being made. But on the other hand, it actually doesn't affect most registries, and it just sort of gives these special type of registries, the brand registries, some leeway to work a little differently. So yes, it did change the contractual requirements for the brand registries in terms of it actually made the requirements somewhat less than they are for other registries. But there was the reason why, and in using this example, and I was personally opposed, I think if I recall correctly, I voted against this, against Specification 13, because I did feel it needed to go through a PDP. But there was a feeling amongst GNSO counselors that this actually was more about also interpreting the intent of a policy and not creating new contractual obligations. And I think that's why the GNSO Council sort of approved ICANN board's desire to introduce this specification. I personally was not of that opinion, but the majority of the council obviously was, and that's why Specification 13 was added to the registry agreement, and that's why it was included as an example in the report on this specific topic. But yes, in terms of, well, if we feel, for example, if a council, a certain group within the council feels that there are new contractual obligations, then they would have to bring that up in council and use the voting threshold to say, no, we shouldn't use this process. We should use a PDP. And that is the problem I have with the recommendations of this process. I think that the voting threshold to approve a GNSO guidance process being initiated should be considerably high, so that a minority of counselors who think that there are actually new contractual obligations being made should have the opportunity, an easy opportunity, to say, no, wait a minute, we shouldn't use this process. We should use either a traditional PDP or maybe even an expedited PDP, but this is not GNSO guidance. This is something that will introduce new contractual obligations, and that should be used. So does that help answer your question?
It does, although...
Well, to be clear...
but I wonder...
Yeah, to be clear... No, it isn't a different issue. I think you're on to something, and you're on to my personal objection in the recommendation of this process, because what the proposal or the recommendation in this report is that initiation of a GGP by the GNSO Council would only require a simple majority vote from the GNSO Council. And when we were discussing this, and we didn't discuss it at length on the work group, because if I recall, the issue came up on the last call of 2014, And it was, I think it was actually the last working group call of that year. I think it was on the 30th or the 31st of December, the 30th of December. And what we had sort of discussed, and this was only maybe in the closing of that call, is that there, starting a GGP, a GNSO guidance process, should have, at least in my view, should have a high threshold of approval on the GNSO Council. So if you do have a minority view within the GNSO Council that feels that a traditional or a formal PDP is required to answer a certain question, that this view should trump other views that no, we can just fast-track this using a GGP or an expedited PDP. So that is a submission that I want to make in response to this initial report. Sort of also as a safeguard from using this process to address questions that would in fact require new contractual obligations by registries and or registrars. Is that helpful at all?
It is. And I agree, but can I run two more things by you that I just heard?
Please, go ahead.
Okay, so a high threshold makes a lot of sense. You don't want only part of the stakeholder groups initiating this GGP process, this GNSO guidance process, because it's going to have a big impact on the board. Let me add that listening to you, what I thought you were saying the goal was, and this makes sense to me, is the board coming back and asking the GNS Council to clarify and maybe slightly extend the policy behind a PDP in its final report. But what the language says is that one of the criteria is that the intended outcome is not expected to result in new contractual obligations for contracted parties. Specification 13 is a new contractual obligation for some contractual parties. So it doesn't apply. Specification 13 could never have gone through under this wording. So just wanted to say if it's possible to go back to that intent of clarifying or limited extension of the policy to maybe areas it wasn't thought about. But here you add a new obligation. You change the contract, you're changing the contractual obligations, at least as a lawyer. That's how I see it. So I wanted to ask you, though, a different question, which is what happens if it's changing the contractual obligation for the registrants? There are contractual obligations for registrants in the new GTLD program, and there are contractual obligations for registrants passed on from ICANN policy through registries to registrars to registrants. So, silly question, but what about me? You know, what about if some of these questions involve registrants and their rights, obligations, and responsibilities, and what they're entitled to?
Thanks for the question, Kathy. If I could answer your question with a question, I'm not sure I see how there may be contractual requirements as a result of an ICANN policy to registrants that don't involve a new contractual requirement from registries or registrars. If you could clarify this, I'd be grateful.
Well, if Specification 13 doesn't change our contractual obligations, then we're talking
about CRP
and everything like that. So it seems like maybe we should add that an outcome is not expected to result in new changes on the obligations or responsibilities of registrants.
Okay, gotcha. All right, that is an interesting point. And yes, I think that is definitely worth putting into the response. But first, let me go to Avri, see what she has to say on this. Go ahead, Avri.
Yeah, hi, this is Avri speaking again. I think, first of all, when you're talking about Specification 13, if there had been expedited PDP, that's what it would have gone under. That this process is meant for things that are not, as was saying, contractual obligations. And in terms of your example, I don't see how those could be put in without them being stuck, either in a registry or specifically a registrar agreement. That's the only way that exists to indirectly put obligations on the registrants is through, you know, the registrar agreement, or perhaps as part of a registry agreement. So I think that the use of, you know, specification 13 as an example here of what could have been a GPP is kind of missing the point. Now, in terms of putting a higher threshold on this, one thing to remember, and I don't really have a big issue with that as a comment, although I do see one issue with it, which is it's not like you fall through and, oh, okay, we're not doing a PG, we're not doing a GPP, not a GPP, a GPP, we should do something else. There's not an immediate fall through. So you defeat the GPP, that's the end of the story, unless there's the initiation of an issues report or unless there's the initiation of an EPDP. So putting a higher threshold is fine, but there is no immediate drop through to, oh, okay, we didn't do the lowest process, now we're going to move up one. And so I'm not sure that it makes that much difference. But as I say, I don't have an objection against the threshold. It's just that all that really achieves is there was an opportunity for the GNSO to give the board some input on a subject, and we set ourselves a high threshold for being able to give the board advice on a subject. It's kind of like we can only give advice to the board on a subject if we have supermajority to give the board advice on a subject, which is a fine way to look at it, but I think it will then exclude the number of chances where we can let the board know that we've got concerns, even if they're mixed concerns, about an issue. So I would say that has to weigh it. But Specification 13 is not a GPP issue. You know, and the fact that there wasn't an expedited PDP is more the problem there than the existence of a GPP. Thanks.
Well, thanks, Aubrey, and thanks for making the clarification. Yes, if a GGP is if it does indeed have a high threshold of voting required to initiate it as a process, if that fails, we don't move, the GNSO doesn't move directly to a PDP. That would require another process being initiated, and that would sort of represent a failure of the GNSO to utilize this process. Just to clarify, my objection to the voting threshold is only for initiating the process, which leads to this problem, of course, but not necessarily to actually approving the recommendations that come out of this process. I'm not saying that, yes, we should have a high voting threshold for approving the process, and then we should have a high voting threshold for approving the recommendations that come out of the process. So if the GNSO Council decides this process is an agreeable one, then I don't mind, I personally, this is my personal view, I don't mind flexibility on the threshold level of the GNSO Council to approve the recommendations that come out of it, because by that time it will already have been determined that this does not require any new contractual obligations in answering any questions provided. But just to make sure that there are no new contractual requirements that may come out of a GGP, that is why I think it is important to have this high voting threshold in actually initiating or kick-starting this process. If I recall the Specification 13 discussions correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, the reason or the argument that most councillors used when actually approving this process, and they did so with a simple majority vote, if I recall correctly as well, is because, well, the argument presented was that this actually doesn't involve any new policies being developed. It's sort of just an interpretation of the existing policies and or discussions that took place around closed GTLDs at the time that may not have been clarified enough to address that certain incident. And that's why, or at least that was the reason given by the GNSO councilors voting in favor of allowing the board to move ahead with specification 13 were given. In a scenario like that, if that had come up when a GGP would have been an option, I would think that a number of councilors would have disagreed, even if it was a minority, which was the case, it was a minority, and said, no, there will be new contractual requirements coming out of as a result of specification 13 being introduced in the registry contract. So, no, a GGP is not a suitable process to use in this sort of scenario, and that's kind of why I think that the high voting threshold is necessary. But that's just my view, my personal view, and that's why I put it in the response. But this is not my response to the initial report. It needs to be the NCSG's. So I would like a certain level of support to a recommendation like that before submitting it. Could I ask for some feedback on that? Be Avery or Kathy, since you've been vocal on this issue.
This is Avery. Like I said, I don't see the point of it, but I wouldn't argue against it. I mean, it just makes it more difficult to give advice. But you know, if that's what we want to do, that's okay.
But my question is, what if someone on the GNSO council actually submitted a request to initiate a GGP to answer the specification 13? Question. What this working group is recommending, that all we need is a simple majority on council to go ahead and approve that. And under that recommendation, then the council would have, in fact, used the GGP to answer the Spec 13 question, which a number of us felt did actually involve new contractual requirements. That's sort of the scenario that I'm trying to avoid with raising the voting threshold on initiating this process. Is that a legitimate concern in any way, or is it going a little overboard?
Better put my hand up again. I would not call it unreasonable. I would not say the words that it was going overboard. I think that these things are not supposed to have contractual changes. So I think even if a GPP was approved, and perhaps, you know, in its charter, and perhaps that's one thing we need to think about, that the charters of these things include the no contractual, you know, arrangements language as part of the boilerplate of such a process, that you don't know that up front. Certainly up front you may fear that, and you would argue that, and you would either convince the others or not. But if the charter for a GPP includes that, and that therefore in that discussion you get to the point of showing that is indeed a contractual obligation that's coming out of that, then I think that's where you have to handle it. To be able to argue up front, well, this might have a contractual obligation, and as I say, this would not have come under that simply because it pertained to a previous PDP. And so anything that pertains to a previous PDP is sort of seems to almost go to that expedited naturally, and that's where it actually belongs. So you wouldn't even be approaching the GPP. But, of course, we know the council can do anything, you know, can do things that are somewhat perverted at times in terms of the processes, because the processes are never 100% sure, I mean, 100% valid in terms of all future possibilities. So, sure, something can happen. As I say, that's why I'm not going to necessarily argue against it and say no. I'm just sort of saying I really don't see the point.
Okay, thanks, Avery. And before going back to Kathy, I see her hands up. I think it would be a good time now to raise one of the questions that the working group has as part of its solicitation to get input on its recommendations. One of the questions the working group has is regarding how a council could how the GNSO council can terminate a GGP before a final report is actually given, and in a scenario like the one that was just described, where a GGP has already been initiated, and then throughout the course of the GGP, to figure out, oh, well, actually, it seems that there are policy issues, contractual requirements issues that are coming up, and there may actually be a need to change some contractual requirements in a registry agreement or a registrar or in the RAA. So one of the questions the working group has is, is a simple majority vote by the council enough to terminate a GGP, or is there another voting threshold that should be required to do this? I think, again, in the context of this discussion, that is something to think about and consider. In my response, I said that a simple majority vote is enough to terminate a GGP, but that was also under the assumption that more than a simple majority vote would be required to initiate it. Just to sort of also make sure that the safeguard is placed over there. But I might have not thought it through as thoroughly as I should have. But I would like to think about it some more, and I take Aubrey's point. Sure, Kathy, please go ahead.
Okay, coming off mute, a really interesting discussion. I'm going to go back to a question I raised before. So, and I'm looking, I feel like I'm listening to the experts. You guys have been living and breathing this, and I really appreciate that. So these are the newbie questions that are coming in, but, you know, way too many working groups in the background here. So the GGP is where the board, if I understand it correctly, may be initiated by the GNSO Council when a request related to GTLD is either a new issue or in relation to previous policy recommendations has been received by the ICANN board and identified by the GNSO Council that would benefit from GNSO guidance and determine that the intended outcome is not expected to result in new contractual obligations for contracted parties. Guys, that could be any question related to the UDRP or the URS or the Trademark Clearinghouse. So a lot of things that affect the rights and responsibilities and rights, let me go back to the rights of registrants, could come through this process. And I'm concerned about that because it seems like it belongs, because the language of the registration agreements are vague and refer to consensus policies adopted by ICANN or refer to the UDRP processes and procedures. But I don't want, you know, we would never want this to become a this GGP to become a backdoor to changing the UDRP's definition of bad faith, for example, or raising different questions about the procedures or the policies, the substantive or procedural aspects of the UDRPs. So I'm just wondering. So yes, I would have a much higher threshold. We don't want these things started, I would think, by a mere majority, but also, it seems the threshold should be a little higher also, that we don't want to change some of the rights and responsibilities of registrants either through this process. Maybe through an expedited PDP, but not through a GGP. It should purely be advice only, right?
Kathy, this is Amr. I completely agree with you, and thank you very much for raising that issue, and I think we should add some language in our response to that effect. And when we're following up the comments submitted, I completely intend on making that point. I think it is a very valid one, and I would personally like to include it in the response if there are no objections. from others, and we will certainly also include this in the discussion in the policy committee when we're trying to get the comment endorsed. I have a question. I'll think of it now. Oh, yeah, I just wanted to point out that a simple majority vote could very well include, for example, the councillors of the commercial stakeholder group, as an example, and the councillors from one of the contracted parties, either the registries and the registrars. So you could basically have those two groups agreeing, and they vote in blocks. So you could basically have those two groups agreeing and have the swing votes by the two NOMCOM appointed voting members of the GNSO Council, which I believe was what happened with Specification 13, if I recall correctly. I think that also happened when we were adopting the charter for the Cross-Community Working Group on Internet Governance. So I just think that a simple majority vote is extremely problematic, and it may be achieved for a number of reasons that could be out of the control of the stakeholder groups of the GNSO. And I'm just a little hesitant in adopting that voting threshold with a process in the GNSO effectively allowing it to trump a traditional PDP that would require a lot more input from the community and a lot more discussion. So that's kind of just a little bit more about why I'm a bit concerned about a low voting threshold to initiate a GGP. And points by Avery and Kathy, well taken. Thank you very much for that. Are there any other questions or comments on this process, or can we move on to the last one, the expedited PDP? Okay, well, we're getting interventions from very few people on the call. I'm wondering if there are others, and I'm really sorry this call has gone on for way longer than it was meant to. I'm guessing we have had a few people drop off. But if anyone else has any questions, please do raise them. You can speak up or type them in the chat, and I'd be happy to address them. Thanks. Okay, the last process, which is the expedited GNSO policy development process. And that starts on page 63. I'm going to sync that so you're all on the same page with me. You should all have that in one of your screens. Okay, so this process should be used. It's an expedited GSO policy development process, and there are also a certain set of circumstances under which this process can be used. And as you see here on the screen, one is to address a narrowly defined policy issue that was identified and scoped after either the adoption of a GSO policy recommendation by the ICANN board or the implementation of such an adopted recommendation, or two, to provide new or additional policy recommendations on a specific policy issue that had been substantially scoped previously, such that extensive pertinent background information already exists. Example A, in an issue report for a past PDP that was not initiated. Another example is part of a previous PDP that was not completed. And a third example is through other projects such as a GGP. So, what an expedited PDP actually means is that sort of it's sort of bypasses the issue scoping phase, so we wouldn't have an issue report because this has already been done before. And for those of you who are not familiar with the traditional PDP process, there is the first step in that process is issue scoping, which is when ICANN staff, in response to initiating a PDP, either by request from the board or from the GNSO Council, they sort of scope all of the issues that may be pertinent to this policy and draft up a preliminary issues report. And when that happens, then you would then that goes out for public comment so that the community can weigh in and either argue that there are some issues that were scoped that should not be within the scope of a specific given PDP, or there are missing issues that should be in the scope and are not included. And those should be taken into consideration and included in the final issues report, which would then move on to other stages of the PDP, such as charter drafting, if that is required, and the PDP working group. So in an expedited PDP, this first step would be skipped because of these certain circumstances that I just mentioned and that are given as an example here on page 63, where this issue has already been scoped, it's already been discussed, either in previous PDP or it was supposed to and it wasn't, but it was already scoped, so we already have the scope. And the GNSO Council at that point decides to use an expedited PDP process, sort of bypassing that first phase of drafting of an initial report, the public comment period, and the issuing of a final issues report. So it would go straight forward to a charter drafting phase, and that's basically sort of the gist of what an expedited PDP would be. Again, for me, the question comes up on the voting thresholds of approving this or not, and I also think this should have a fairly high sort of a voting threshold on council, maybe equal to a traditional PDP, which is, I think, two-thirds of the council members of each house. I may be off. I may be mistaken on this. But that's what I believe it is. That's what I believe it should be, at least for using an expedited PDP as opposed to a traditional one. Trying to catch up on some of the comments in the chat. Oh, thanks, Klaus. And Sam has a comment saying, I see two issues here. One is the need for decision-making speed in some cases. The other is issues that turn out to be bigger than they first appear. The process has to handle both. Sam, I'm assuming this comment is related to the GNSO guidance process, not the expedited PDP. And yes, I think you're correct in that, and sort of the balance we need to achieve, but also make sure that there are safeguards to make sure that these processes aren't abused or misused in any way, whether intentionally or not. So I think that's the issue here of balancing that out, and we should probably discuss this further, either on list or maybe now if you would like to raise this and discuss it further. Marilee Wolf, feeling to read the document and go, yes, it is a lot to take in, and especially if you're not very familiar with the existing process, and that's a lot to take in itself. But thank you for being on the call. And Kathy says, we've had some bad issue reports in the past. Yes, we have. Aubrey says, Kathy, that is why we get to review draft issues reports these days, to try and avoid bad issues reports. Yes, and that's one of the reasons why I'm breathing a little easier regarding the post-EWG PDP, because we finally are going to have this new preliminary issues report and be able to comment on that. So glad that's going on. Wondering if there are any comments on the expedited PDP at this point. Kathy, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. And, I'll join with the others who say, we're trying to absorb this. So, silly question, but hearkening back to Joy's question, would this have prevented the straw man plus 50? And here I'm going to put on the intellectual property hat, which is we had finished the URS and Trademark Clearinghouse, what we called the STI, Special Trademark Initiatives Working Group. Finished, closed it. There was a part of the GNSO that would call what we had, and we had rejected a lot of things that were then that were brought up later in that crazy LA meeting. So how do we prevent this process, this expedited GNSO policy development process, from reopening things that were rejected by the original working group and calling it a narrowly defined policy issue that's already been scoped? Sure, it's already been scoped. It's already been scoped and rejected. How do we prevent that second, third bite at the apple? Maybe I'm missing something in the wording. Thanks, Amr.
Well, thank you, Kathy. And I don't think you are missing anything in the wording. I don't think that it was necessarily addressed on whether this issue was scoped, discussed, and recommended against. I'm actually assuming that revisiting old policies was actually the intent of having the expedited PDP. And you raise a very interesting point on whether this is to sort of overturn a previous policy decision that was rejected and sort of using this as a tool to reopen those issues or not. And maybe there should be some language addressing that and making sure that that does not become a habit. And yeah, I would also not be in favor of that being used to that effect at all. Let me make a note of that. Any other thoughts on Kathy's last comment? I thought it was a rather good one.
I have one.
Go ahead, Aubrey, please.
This is Aubrey again. Yeah, I think that's partly why you're probably right that this should have the same threshold as a PDP. I think we have to be aware that at the moment they get a second and third bite at the apple by just going directly to the board. And we've got no mechanism for forcing it into a process. So you're right, the risk does exist there still. It becomes a mechanism that can be used other than just running to the board. And the board can now easily say, no, you have to take that back to the GNSO. So that's already an improvement. I think the higher threshold is a good idea. In this case, it should be the equivalent of a PDP, and I think it's kind of easy to make that requirement in this case. So if it is a second bite at the apple, it's a second bite at the apple that a supermajority of the council is willing to take. And, you know, that could work as much for some of our issues as it has worked for other people's issues. But I think that, you know, Kathy's exemption does make sense. It's just that happens now already without there being a place to send the issue. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Aubrey. What I was wondering is the high voting threshold enough to sort of block this way of using an EPDP, or should that also be included in the specific circumstances, or sort of say you can't use an EPDP for a policy that was narrowly defined and scoped and discussed and rejected? So we don't want to use the EPDP to reopen that policy. Okay, so that is sort of my question. Aubrey, what do you think? Should we? Go ahead.
I don't think so. I think that, first of all, you get into a great degree of subjectivity there. And, you know, the ability to put the discussion into different framing, you know, becomes the next game that one plays so that it doesn't look like it. But there is also the possibility that there has been an evolution of understanding, a set of changed circumstances that made the suppositions taken in a PDP no longer quite as operational as they appeared to be at that time. And if that were the case, then this kind of mechanism that sort of says this issue is properly under the PDP, with the increased threshold that, like any PDP, it needs a supermajority to go for it, although I don't think that's necessarily the case of PDPs. we have to differentiate between the ones that are in scope and aren't in scope, and there are different voting thresholds. But nonetheless, I think that, you know, to try and bar that becomes a really difficult subjective issue of contention, and relying on a sufficient threshold vote is probably still the best way to go. And if somebody's going to do that, then this is the only reasonable way for it to be allowed. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Aubrey. That sounds good to me. Kathy, is that a good way, do you think, to move
no.
forward with this?
No, I'm sorry. Because for some of our friends out there, the moment after the PDP closes, everything has changed and they will want to revisit it. So what I'm trying to understand is how we separate the
We will too.
But we don't have the same resources as some of these other working groups. Some of them have a lot of people. They staff these working groups with 20 people. And I'm on one now, 20 people from, you know, commercial stakeholder group. It's really nice, but we don't have that. So here's what I want to know is how we separate this expedited PDP, which to me should be very, very narrow. Specification 13, Aubrey, I think you're absolutely right. That's a perfect example. We didn't really expect and anticipate this kind of new category and class of brands. And I agree with Amr. I don't like the way it went through the GNSO Council. I was watching it from afar. I was really surprised. That seems to me to be a perfect thing for an expedited PDP, which is you didn't consider something, and we need it, and we need it now. It's halfway between implementation and policy, and that's where I think we got the brand registries in Specification 13. But the idea of revisiting the trademark clearinghouse and what the rules are for what goes into it, no, we've set up a review process for that a year and a half down. I mean, it was in the rules of the PDP that we're closing this, and we're going to review it all together at some later time. Same with the UDRP. I would hate to cherry pick. I mean, a lot has changed in the last 15 years, but we know in November that issues report is coming down, and we're looking at the whole thing. And while I know WIPO wanted to cherry pick and look at certain issues, and commercial did, and non-commercial does, we're going to all look at it at one time, and everybody's kind of holding their breath and waiting for that big issues report to come down. I wouldn't want to see this bypass that. So it seems to me this is for things that really need to be considered quickly, but for whatever reason weren't considered in the original PDP, not were considered. Does that make any sense? Because otherwise we undermine that big review process that takes place later on with everybody on board and all the context. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. I do think that what you say does make sense, but I also agree with Aubrey that there would be a level of subjectivity that would then be used to allow this to go to a vote on council. If we make a recommendation, if it is adopted, I mean, to that effect, which is why I also personally feel that a high voting threshold in this situation would be a good way to go. I'm assuming there are other parts of the GNSO Council. I'm assuming there would be more than one stakeholder group in the GNSO Council that may feel that that they do not want to revisit policy issues that have taken a long time to discuss and that were already rejected. So I don't imagine that you will have a supermajority number of councillors who are willing to revisit this, and that's kind of why I feel okay with the voting threshold also being the safeguard in this situation. But yeah, I see your comment in the chat saying, but it would be nice to put that into the rules. The problem I see there is that, like Aubrey said, there would be a certain level of subjectivity involved in that, and if it was in the rules and you have a group sort of argue their subjective view that this is something that has been discussed and rejected, in the past, it may actually block the issue from even going to a vote on the GNSO Council. To be honest, I can't see how that would work. I mean, from a process perspective, I can't see how that discussion would take place and how the decision would be made on whether to vote for it or not, which is why I think that the easy and practical solution for this, and I think it's also I think it would work. I honestly feel that it would work, is just having this high voting threshold. I personally don't want to belabor this point too much, but I also don't want to prevent anyone who has something further to say on this to say it. So if there are more comments on this, please make them now. You could always pick this up on list, of course. Kathy, is that an old hand or a new one?
Yeah, then I just wanted to say the answer to Jory's question.
Yeah, please,
from my
go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Amr? Okay. Then I'm really concerned here that there's no pushback in this expedited process to say, no, we're not revisiting things that have already closed. I would really like you to ask that you and Avery take that back and think and work with the others, because I think this is important that we don't, because it does, to Joy's question earlier, it does open up that straw man the very, you know, within 6 months of when we closed it. And that's not really what we want. I really think this expedited PDP is to fill in the blanks, the gaps, what lawyers call the interstices, what was missing, what wasn't considered, not what was considered. So I'd urge you to think of language, substantive language, that defines certain types of things as out of scope so we don't have to re-argue them again. I think that's really important. Procedural is good, but people on the council might not know everything that was argued earlier. I think we're setting up. I think we can push it a little farther and make this not as susceptible to gaming in the future. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Sure, I will try to come up with some language. My feeling on this right now is maybe not to insist that there's language introduced into the recommendations of the working group to that effect, but maybe just at least bring it up as a discussion point amongst the working group members, and maybe have something in our response asking us to do this. On a scale of 1 to 10, this is a 10. Yeah, I appreciate your level of concern with this. I think we are a bit divided on how to handle this. I'm sure there is, I mean, any one of us would be concerned about this, but how to actually handle it is the question we have here. I would personally appreciate more discussion on this issue, and maybe we should take it to the list. We still have a week before we have to submit the public comments, so maybe we can talk about this a little bit more, and I certainly will encourage the working group members to also discuss it and try to get their take on this. I should mention, I probably should have done this at the very beginning, is that this working group was not like your typical PDP working group. It wasn't a sort of contentious environment. It wasn't one where there was a lot of conflict. I think everyone, all the members from the different groups on this working group were really working together, trying to come up with these processes to make sure that they work as well as they can. From my perspective, I don't feel that there was much intent on gaming processes, and I think, and that's why I'm recommending that we also take this to the working group members, because I think there would be an honest discussion on how this should be handled. But I think we should definitely discuss this further within the NCSG as well. Well, with that, if there aren't any more questions, that sort of covers everything I wanted to say about the report. I am willing to go ahead and also skim very quickly through the survey and the answers I provided. I think that we could do this fairly quickly. I would understand if people want off the call. We have been at it for quite some time now. But first, I would like to ask Miriam, is there actually a problem in us taking this long on a webinar, or is it okay?
No, there is no problem at all.
All right, cool. So let me do this. I'll go through the survey very quickly. If anyone wants to drop off at this point, please go ahead. I won't take it personally. I know we've gone way over time, but please, if you are interested, we can go through these questions very quickly. I think we've actually addressed most of them already. If it's okay, I'm going to sync the screen so that we're all looking at the same thing. If you want me to desync it at any point, please let me know. Okay. Just to let you know, I'm not submitting this in my personal capacity. It's just that the way the PDF file was, I had to sort of fill everything out, so that's why my name is up there. I don't take personal ownership of this in any way. Okay, let's go on to the next question. Question four, which is the one we should probably start with, is the working group developed a number of working definitions. See section three. Please rate whether you consider these definitions useful in the context of this report. I put in very helpful. I understand that we didn't go through those definitions here, but once you go through the report, you will, I think, appreciate those definitions being in there to sort of guide you and let you know what exactly is meant when the word consensus policy is being used, and just as an example. If there are any questions as I go through these, please raise your hand or just speak up. Thanks. Question five, the working group has developed a set of proposed policy implementation principles, section four of the initial report, that it recommends are adopted by the GNSO Council and ICANN Board to guide any future policy implementation-related work. You support the adoption of these proposed principles by the GNSO Council and the ICANN Board? I said yes. I think those principles are really good principles. I think the intent of having them is primarily to empower the GNSO as much as possible in regards to developing GTLD policy. So I also said yes. But Avery, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thanks. I'm wondering whether this isn't a place to make a mention, and I have to go back. I don't think we have a principle that says no second bites at the apple, but and no taking things through the wrong track. But this may be a place where I worry about putting, you know, rules and getting too specific in the rules in the particular things. Perhaps in the principles, it's worth our looking at it and seeing whether, you know, we do need a principle that says, you know, no second bites at apple. Or, I mean, obviously in proper language. But, you know, that's just a thought, you know, that I hadn't had until this particular set of conversations.
That's a good thought, actually, as far as I can tell. Kathy, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, thanks, Amar. I wrote it into the notes that I was thinking the same thing Avery was, although I'm not as familiar with the principles. I know you read them, but I'd have to go back. But this seems like a yes, but, and add some more of the details and concerns, and then maybe the working group can scope out a few more limitations.
All right. Sounds fair enough. Certainly worth discussing further, but thank you for that, Avery. I think that sounds like at least we have a suggestion on how to move forward on this. Question number six, which you have on the screen in front of you right now, as outlined in Section 5 of the initial report, the working group recommends the creation of three new GNSO processes, namely a GNSO input process, a GNSO guidance process, and a GNSO expedited policy development process. Please rate each of these processes. So you have the different processes in the rows, and you have the level of support in the columns. For the GNSO input process, I put in support adoption. I support adopting that process as it was recommended. On the GGP and the expedited PDP, I put in would support adoption if changes as outlined below are made. Let me see. How's that better? And in the comments, I pretty much described my issue with the voting thresholds, and those are the recommendations I think should be made. And if those recommendations are made, I would support the adoption of these processes. That's the short version of everything that you've got written on the screen there in front of you. And you can always go back. I've circulated this document on the NCSG list, so you can take another look at it if you want to. Kathy, is that a new hand?
Yeah, it's a new hand. That the suggestion is on the table for the expedited PDP, that we further define it, going back to what Aubrey was saying, what I was saying, no second bites at the apple, that those belong to the policy development review process, that this should be maybe, you know, for a different set of questions. It's on the table for evaluation by you, by Aubrey, by the working group, that this expedited PDB should really be about filling in blanks, things we hadn't thought of, special categories that need to be considered, details that rise above implementation but below policy, but not revisiting things we closed because we'll be a revolving door.
All right, great. Thanks, Kathy. That's also worth putting in there along with including those in recommendations for the principals, sort of referring this question back to the previous one as well, and I've taken a note of it. I will recirculate an updated version of this once I've collected all input, both on today's webinar and tomorrow's. I hope tomorrow's doesn't take as long as it did today, but we'll see. Question 7. In the initial report, the working group recommends that advisory committees and the board could request a GGP, but only the GNSO Council would have the authority to actually initiate a GGP. Should an advisory committee or the board have the ability to initiate a GGP similar to their ability to do so for a PDP, i.e. the GNSO Council would be required to commence a GGP? In my answer, I put in yes. That was a mistake. I should have put in no, because the actual question is whether other parts of the community should require the GNSO to adopt a specific process or to initiate a specific process. And I think that was clarified in the text. I think that members of different parts of the community should have the flexibility to ask the GNSO questions in whatever format they require, but it is ultimately up to the GNSO. It's the GNSO's decision on what process to use. So my answer to number 7 would actually be a no, not a yes, and the reasons are provided in the text. If anyone has a comment on this right now? Does anyone feel that maybe another ACE-year SO or the ICANN board should require that a specific process be used, or should the GNSO make this determination? Okay, I see no objection. Moving on. Question number 8, for an ePDP, an expedited PDP, it is currently proposed that only the GNSO Council can initiate this process, although an AC board could request the GNSO Council to consider doing so. Do you agree? That's sort of related to the previous question. Yes. My answer here would be yes. And I refer to the text at the same reasoning of the answer in question number 7. I'm sorry, Sam, I see your question in the chat. Is that correction number 7 properly communicated to the survey analysis? If your question is, has the correction been communicated to the working group, I haven't submitted this yet. This is still under discussion and hasn't gone through the policy committee yet. So we're just reviewing this now, and I will make after tomorrow's webinar, we're holding a webinar just like this one again tomorrow to accommodate people in different time zones. I will recirculate this with all the additions that have been and amendments that have been recommended. So yeah, this hasn't been submitted yet. Thanks, Sam. Moving on, question number 9, the proposed voting threshold for initiating a GGP is the same as for initiating a PDP, an affirmative vote of more than one-third of each house or more than two-thirds of one house. Do you agree? And here I said no and cited my reasons for acquiring a higher voting threshold. And this is something that we've discussed at length during this call. So I don't think we need to revisit it, but this was the answer that I provided. Seeing no hands, so I'm going to move on. Question number 10, the proposed voting threshold for approving a GGP is a supermajority vote of the GNSO Council. Do you agree? I said yes, also for the same reasons as the question before. So I think out of the three new processes being suggested, it's only the GNSO input process that I think would be okay with a lower threshold in adopting it, because this is something that has, it's a process that will be used to answer questions that are clearly non-related to GTLD policy. But for the GGP and for the expedited PDP, I think we do need this high voting threshold. Okay, that's question number 10. Question number 11. For a PDP vote, if these are not adopted by the GNSO Council by a supermajority vote, as defined for the GNSO Council, there is a lower threshold for the board to overturn these. Should the same apply for the GGP, or if there is no supermajority support, the GGP final report fails? So this question is asking whether the ICANN board can overturn the recommendations of the GNSO if the recommendations don't are not adopted. Let me just read this again real quick. Well, these are not adopted by the GNSO Council by a supermajority vote. Yeah, so if the recommendations are not adopted by a supermajority council vote, can the ICANN board just go ahead and overturn these recommendations? And my answer was no. And my reasoning here is that the ICANN board should not be able to overturn decisions made by the GNSO in accordance with the voting thresholds that are agreed to be used. This is something that we haven't really discussed on today's call, so if there are any thoughts on this, I'd appreciate hearing them now. We've only talked about voting thresholds in terms of initiating processes, not in terms of actually approving recommendations coming out of the process. But here we're also talking about a regular PDP. We're not talking about any of the new processes, just the actual PDP. No objections, and Kathy's saying agreed. Okay, thanks. Moving on to question number 12, termination of a GGP. It is proposed that a simple majority council vote as defined in GNSO procedures is sufficient to terminate a GGP prior to delivery of the final report, compared to a supermajority vote that applies in case of the PDP. Do you agree? And I put in yes here, and I we touched upon this earlier, and I put in yes here assuming, and maybe I should add that in the text, assuming that it does take a supermajority vote to actually launch or initiate a GGP. The lower voting threshold required in terminating it is in case, in my view, in case that during the course of a GGP, it is discovered that actually, well, yeah, there are some new contractual obligations that registries or registrars would have to abide by. So the GGP, and these have only surfaced during the course of the GGP. So yes, we should have this low voting threshold here to terminate it before a final report or any recommendations are delivered. And I take Kathy's point on some new obligations for registrants. And yes, we will include this in our comments. Thanks for that, Kathy. Sam, I see you typing. Something related to this question. I agree on the logic behind. Oh, thanks. Thanks, Sam. Sam also agrees on the logic behind question number 12. Actually, let me make a note. I should probably add a little bit more text explaining the logic behind the answer. 12. And question number 13, the working group recommends that the PDP manual be modified to require the creation of an implementation review team following the adoption of PDP recommendations by the ICANN board, but allow the GNSO Council the flexibility to not create an IRT in exceptional circumstances. Example, if another IRT is already in place that could deal with the PDP recommendations. Do you agree? And this is something that I actually haven't gone through with the IRT, and it is an important point. The example between parentheses here is only one example. There were others discussed by the working group. For example, if nobody volunteers to join an IRT because there's simply little interest, another example might be the PDP going on now on translation and transliteration of contact information, where the PDP working group might actually recommend that no changes or no policy be adopted. So in a situation like that, there would actually be no need at all for an IRT. It wouldn't make any sense to have an IRT for a policy that the PDP working group is recommending not be adopted. So that's sort of the answer to this question. Kathy, your hand's up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's another IRT in place that could deal with the PDP recommendations. By Avery's logic, some time ago during this discussion, I thought that the idea was to have the people on the IRT who would help create the policy. So in this case, if you're transferring that policy to a different IRT, would you want to say yes, but, and open up, and I haven't thought this through, but open up the door for some of the members who could have been on the new IRT to join the old IRT? Just a possibility.
That's a good point, Kathy, and maybe I should.
It may have downsides I haven't considered. It may definitely have downsides I haven't considered that I know you and Avery will think about. But I'm thinking if the first IRT, for example, doesn't have anybody from our stakeholder group, but the second IRT might, you know, just something like that. Different scenarios. On the other hand, it could work the opposite way as well. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'll make a note of that. Sam put a comment in the text saying problem with exceptional since. That may imply some additional test, what and by whom. I would leave it to the wisdom of the GNSO Council to decide without some exceptional test. Yes, and that's also a valid point. Saying exceptional circumstances here does give some level of subjectivity to a reason why an IRT may not be necessary. Maybe there should be some more objective criteria set on when the council doesn't require, wouldn't launch an IRT following a PDP working group. That's a fair point. But I would also like to remind everyone that the purpose of launching these processes is to make the GNSO Council's work as flexible, or the GNSO in general, the GNSO's work as flexible as possible to the needs that come up. But yes, I certainly think that there should be a bit more specific set of circumstances under which not requiring an IRT to be in place should. There should be some at least minimum standards, but I also would recommend against using language that would prevent the GNSO Council from being as flexible as possible in situations that we simply can't think of right now. So keeping both those in mind, I'll try to come up with something to that effect. Ron in the chat says, if the recommendation of the PDP is to not implement changes, but staff does adopt changes, then an IRT would have the opportunity to comment. Ron, that would be a pretty big problem because the example I used on translation and transliteration, it's really a binary question that we're trying to get an answer to. So the basically the PDP is being asked to say, the PDP working group is asked to say yes or no on whether something, a certain policy is desirable or not. So the PDP working group says no, it is not desirable. Then staff starts implementing it under the assumption that the recommendation is yes. That would be extremely problematic. And I'm not sure if an IRT would be the ideal solution to this sort of situation. My mind's a little blank right now. I'm guessing that any new policies being implemented, I mean, in the absence of an IRT, there would be no follow-up by the GNSO Council. I'm wondering how the GNSO would learn that ICANN staff is actually implementing a policy that the GNSO and the ICANN board said they shouldn't, but I don't see how that could be done. Anybody would like to weigh in on this, I'd appreciate it. But just to be clear, an IRT would not be created unless it was recommended by the GNSO Council as part of its recommendations to the ICANN board, which the ICANN board would also adopt. The same goes for consensus policies. So if the GNSO Council says we recommend that this policy not be adopted and the ICANN board approves that recommendation, I'm not sure how Global Domain Division staff would actually start implementing that policy. Question 14, the working group recommends that the principles as outlined in Annex H of the initial report are followed as part of the creation as well as operation of IRTs. Do you support the adoption of these proposed principles? I said yes, but taking into account the comments. Yeah, okay. Just going back to 13, I see Sam has comments saying I would simply drop require and exceptional. I'm looking for require here. Modify to require the creation. Well, Sam, the purpose of require here in the language is that having IRTs is sort of the default scenario. If you have a PDP that is approved by the GNSO Council and then adopted by the ICANN board, then the standard operating procedure here would be that an IRT be created, and that is to help the GNSO sort of stay on top of how these policies are being implemented. So the default function here would be to require the IRT unless specifically the GNSO Council has a reason saying that this is not necessary. So that's why it requires there. I see the issue with exceptional. Certainly agree with you on that, and maybe we should suggest some alternative. But on require, I think, yeah, we need to keep that there. All right. Thanks, Sam, and thank you, Ron. Ron says agree that IRT should be the default procedure. Okay, again, back to question number 14. This goes to something that I also mentioned in passing earlier when discussing the IRT and the role of the GNSO Council liaison in terms of sort of acting as a mediator in the event that there is a conflict between GDD staff and the IRT members. Like I said, in implementing policies, GDD staff would assume the role of a working group chair, so they would lead the discussion and the work of the implementation. The IRT is just there to help them implement the policy as intended when it was adopted by the GNSO and the ICANN board. In the event of a conflict, the role of the GNSO Council liaison, as recommended by this working group, is to sort of act as a mediator to mediate the discussion and try to achieve some form of agreement between ICANN staff, GDD staff, and the IRT members. Now, what this question, what this question is specifically about is what happens if the council liaison fails to get the two parties to agree? What the recommendation says that if there is enough consensus amongst the IRT members, that then this issue should be raised to the GNSO Council so the GNSO Council can take action. My problem with that is, what if you don't achieve consensus amongst the IRT members, but there are still some members, even a minority, even one IRT member, who feels that this issue should be escalated to the GNSO Council. The recommendation here would prevent that from happening, and I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but if I use the existing GNSO working group guidelines as a reference, this role does exist within a PDP working group, and the GNSO Council's liaisons to that working group's role in mediating conflicts between the working group chair and working group members. Now, the GNSO working group guidelines, there is no requirement for a consensus call. As long as there's a problem between a working group member and the working group chair that cannot be resolved even after the GNSO Council liaison intervenes, then the working group member can ask the GNSO Council liaison to escalate this issue to the GNSO Council. A new standard has been created here in implementation review teams. I'm not sure. I don't see any reason why this new standard has been created. I would assume that it should be the same standard that applies to working group members. So that's why I inserted this comment there and sort of put a provision to endorsing this recommendation. Does anyone have any other thoughts on this? Kathy says very legitimate concern. Okay, seeing no other comments, I'm going to just leave that as it is. This is the last part of the survey. If you have other comments, proposed edits, or questions, would you like to put forward that you would like the working group to consider? I guess just put them. I did put one going through the report, and I'm not sure if this is a typo or not. But I'm going to read this here. It says Annex E, Section 4 on page 69 of the initial report. And let me see what that is. Well, that says refers to the ICANN bylaws in Article 10, Section 3, paragraphs 9, D to F as a reference for voting threshold required by the GNSO Council for an affirmative vote approving expedited PDP recommendations. So those are sort of the voting thresholds that were put in the recommendations of the initial report. And when I cross-checked those with the ICANN bylaws, I discovered that those are the voting thresholds required not to approve PDP recommendations, but actually to approve the charter of a PDP, and they're considerably lower voting thresholds. So I'm not sure if this was intentional or a mistake by the working group in drafting the recommendations in this report, but I certainly think that the voting threshold for approving the recommendations of an EPDP should be the same as those of approving recommendations coming out of a PDP, and not the lower threshold of approving a charter. Any thoughts on that? Is this issue clear? Have I made it clear to folks, or did I repeat it? Okay, just to clarify one more time, there are two voting thresholds concerning a policy development process. There's a lower voting threshold to approve the charter of a PDP working group, then there's the higher one to approve the recommendations. And those are here they're using the lower threshold to approve the expedited PDP recommendations, and I'm just saying that they should use the higher thresholds of approving the PDP recommendations for the same purpose of approving recommendations of the EPDP. So that's just my additional comments. So unless there are any other questions or concerns, that wraps it up for today, tonight, or this afternoon or evening, wherever you are. Any other questions, comments, or concerns? Folks can certainly pick this up on the list at any point over the next week. The deadline to submit the public comment is March 17th. I think we will need at least a couple of days on the policy committee to endorse whatever we eventually come up with. I will circulate another version of the comments of the survey after tomorrow's webinar to capture everything we've discussed both today and what we will discuss tomorrow. So unless there are any other comments tonight, I guess we can wrap this up. Again, I do apologize for taking so long, but this is a complex issue and certainly worthy of discussion. Okay, seeing nothing, thank you all very much and for bearing with me and being patient and staying on the call this long. And I look forward to any more comments over the next few days.
Thank you,
Mariam. I think
the
we can
tour de force. Well done.
Thank you very much. All, you can now stop the recording, please.
Thank you.
Thank you all.